Hi, it's Tony Brisky from Real Ghost Stories Online. Every single day, Jenny and myself do our best to try and create the best possible show for you. But it's not free to do that. We have a lot of hard costs on this end to distribute the show, produce the show, and put it out there for you. So we ask for your help by becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. We're doing our best to make it worth your while by giving you a bonus episode every single week with some of the best stories we can find. Also, exclusive video content, including our new monthly video feature, Seeing Ghosts, where we examine some of the best ghost photos and discuss them that we get into the show here at Real Ghost Stories Online. All I ask is that if you listen to the show on a regular basis, please consider helping support keeping it on the air. It's only $5 a month, or sign up for a full year at a time and get 1 month free. If you already are an EPP, thank you very much. If you're not yet, please consider supporting a show that you enjoy so we can continue creating it for you. Sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. And thank you.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a listener is a little afraid to listen to our show for fear that something is listening with her. That's interesting.
Yeah.
We've had similar type, I don't know, I gotta hear this story, but it's not the first of a ghost listening to our show. Also, his friends gather around a bonfire to celebrate. They begin to witness a frightening sight within the flames. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hello,
and how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fine. I am jolly in this new year.
Good.
Well, actually, it's not. We're recording this towards the end of 2015, but this is airing in 2016, so I'm pretending it's the new year.
You're thinking about it.
That was a great New Year's Eve celebration, wasn't it?
I hope so.
It was wonderful. I so much enjoyed the cheese and chips. So we have lots of good stories for you today here on the show. Looking forward to these and your calls. Of course, 855-853-4802 is our phone number to call in your real ghost story to us. Or you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. So lots of ways for you to get your stories to us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Remember to press subscribe, whatever platform it is you listen to us on, iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, whatever the case may be. That helps our show grow in those rankings, so please do that and press subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. To kick off the show today, we will go to one of our letters. Miranda writes in, "Good morning, Tony and Jenny. My name is Miranda, and I'm writing from Minnesota. I hesitate at writing this story as I'm currently sitting in the building where several happenings have been occurring. I've been listening to your podcast for the last month and can't get enough of them. Really enjoy your EPPs as well. Well, now for the story of my events. I work in an armory that currently houses several Army Reserve units. The kind of lay of the scene is you enter the front door of the building, you're walking into a long corridor that separates the building into two sides. One on the north side of the building, then along the corridor, a number of offices as well as a loading dock that has hundreds of large cages for storing equipment. On the south side of the corridor are more office areas. The corridor is long and the ceiling is very high. The building has skylights that run the length of the corridor, providing natural lighting, so there are very few lights in the corridor. When it is early in the morning or later in the evening, as well as any time it is stormy, the building has a very dark and intimidating feeling. As I sit here, I'm thinking of a couple of things that have happened here in my 8 years of working at this location. I used to work late in the evening when no one else was around. The corridor would be dark and the sun had already set, and I'd be plugging away at my office. And the entryway to the office is a microwave and a refrigerator. Several times while I was working late into the evening, I'd hear the refrigerator door open and someone fumbling around the fridge, followed by the door shutting and the microwave door opening, closing, and then turning on. When I get up to look and see it was there, the microwave would be running and no one would be around. I go to the running microwave, open the door, only to find it empty. This had happened on several occasions. Look around to see who was in the offices to find myself alone. One night, the microwave again had turned itself on, and I yelled and almost screamed, "Stop!" at which the microwave suddenly turned off. I was a little freaked out and again left my office to investigate. Seeing no one, as I went back to my office and sat back at my desk, I made a smart comment, almost underneath my breath, something to the effect of, "Well, if you're going to be in it in this late, you could at least help me." At that time, I heard what sounded like fingernails drumming right next to me on the desk. I panicked and left my office in a rush. Didn't even bother locking the door, verifying that the building was secure, which, at my line of work, is a big no-no. I have a cage over by the loading dock, which I hate going back to by myself. There are two long hallways breaking off from the dock that each have cages running along both sides, with the exception of a small break in the left hallway. That is a turnoff to go to yet another hallway with more cages. The only issue is within this turnoff is the coffin and flags used for funeral service practice. Whenever I walk in this area, I get the chills. I haven't seen anything of any form back there, but it makes me feel really nervous. I see shadows or areas that are unnaturally darker than many areas around them. I avoid this area as much as possible. Lately, since I've been listening to your show, I feel that whatever is in the building has been listening with me. I leave your podcast running virtually all day long. I recently rearranged my office and found that the carpet stunk. When I was done, I had to put an air freshener on top of the filing cabinet, almost overhanging the front of the cabinet. The filing cabinet is covered in dust, so it made a perfect ring where I'd set it down. One day I'd gone to a meeting and had left the podcast running. When I returned, my office mate was looking around my side of the office. When I asked him what was going on, he said he didn't know. He heard a big bang and came over to my area to investigate. He was listening to one of the stories, and my Bluetooth speaker died, turning off the podcast. About 20 seconds after the podcast stopped, he heard a bang. Started looking with him, but nothing seemed out of place until I looked on top of my filing cabinet. The air freshener was gone. We finally located the air freshener behind the filing cabinet in pieces, almost as if it had been thrown. I looked on top of the filing cabinet, thinking maybe when I was rearranging, I may have bent the cabinet and it was at an angle and that the air freshener could have slid backwards off the cabinet, but the solid ring and the dust where I had originally set down the canister was still intact. I had no idea what happened. There are other stories about this site, from hearing sword fighting occurring in the hallway at night, lights going off and on their own, as well as stories from the property that we are on. I'll save those for another time. I am tense enough as it is.
I think that's funny. It's almost like it threw a hissy fit that it didn't hear the show anymore.
It's upset.
Yeah.
Would you enjoy the show if you were a ghost?
I don't know.
I think it almost would lose some of its allure because you're already over there. Unless it's still just confusing on that side, too.
I don't know. It's almost like, I guess maybe I would listen to see how close we are to getting to figuring it out and be like, no, that's not how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because once you're on that side, obviously the secrets are unlocked.
Sure. Or are they? That's what I'm saying. Is it like where, you know, we have all these different types of things,
mm-hmm.
and they're the ones that are trapped for whatever reason in this building and they don't know how to get out beyond it. Are they looking to other ghost stories for directive?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe kind of like How to Be a Ghost 101.
Yeah, exactly. Haunting for Dummies.
Yeah, Haunting for Dummies.
Hauntings for dummy ghosts. I don't know. Interesting story, and that's really creepy where you have the ring because you would see if it slid, you know?
Yeah.
That's very telling. So good detective work there,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that identify that. Thank you for sharing that story with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Dan writes in, "Hello, Tony and Jenny. It's Dan from Williamsburg again, and I have a Halloween story to share with you. I'm a native Russian, and I learned a short time ago that I have traces of Celtic and Druid in my family history. This Halloween, I had the opportunity to take part in a Samhain bonfire night celebration with some good friends of mine We had quite an interesting experience. What most people don't know is that what we call Halloween was actually created by Celtics and Druids several centuries ago. Samhain is a holiday that Celts and Druids celebrate to recognize the end of the harvest time and the beginning of winter. According to Celtic lore, on the eve of All Hallows, occasionally referred to as Spirits' Night, the bearer, the veil between the physical world and the spirit world, is nearly transparent. Spirits of all kinds are free to roam the earth. Those that are participating in the celebration put on costumes in order to frighten away evil spirits, and they leave the doors of their homes open in hopes that the spirits of their relatives or ancestors will enter their home and keep it safe. Now, on to what happened. I was at the bonfire with four friends that hadn't seen or heard. I hadn't seen or heard from in over 6 years, and we were enjoying each other's company and talking about what had been going on in our lives. The fire was raging by that point, and the celebration had taken a strange turn. Several of the native Celtics that were there began performing small pagan rituals of their own, which is normal for some people that are natives of that. We all noticed at the same time that the air began feeling heavier and heavier, and it also felt like it was electrically charged with energy. My close friend, Celestia, a Wiccan who is very sensitive to the paranormal, even though she does not practice any form of black magic, spoke up and said that someone had opened a portal and that there were spirits coming out of it. Not 1 second after she said that, I felt a hand run down my arm and then let go. We could all feel the spirits around us, and others were noticing the same things. She told us that most of the spirits were ancestral and that they were just visiting their descendants. Suddenly, without warning, the fire began roaring louder than ever, and it was so loud that it had attracted everyone's attention. What was strange is that the roaring of the flame sounded more like the growl of a large animal. My heart nearly skipped when I gazed into the flames and could see what looked like human figures dancing in the flames. They weren't shadows or mists or orbs, just figures of people that were formed by the tongue of the flames. I turned to Celestia and asked her what was happening, and she said, "These are not friendly spirits. They're demonic, and they are taunting the ancestral spirits that had been welcomed into the circle." People sat with their eyes transfixed on the demons dancing in the fire for what felt like an eternity, when suddenly the fire went out completely. People were completely stunned by this, because no fire of that size could have been extinguished in such a short amount of time. It didn't slowly grow dimmer or fade out. It was out in less than a second. Just as I was about to ask Celestia what happened, she turned to us and said that the ancestral spirits had attacked the demons in the fire in order to protect us, and they took the fire itself to the underworld. I'd like both of your opinions on what you think caused so much spiritual activity to happen in one place, and what you think the figures in the bonfire were, and if they were demonic like Celestia suggested. I believe that there was a spiritual battle occurring that night, and that we were being protected from whatever was in the fire. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope to hear the story on a podcast soon. As soon as I get paid again, I'm going to sign up to be an EPP, and will definitely be writing in several more stories in the future. Hope you both had a fantastic Halloween, and I wish you luck with future episodes.
I'll just say it. I have no idea what was going on, but I think something definitely was going on.
I know exactly what I'm... Okay. I don't. I have no idea what happened. I don't know. I mean, is it... If you were to go take it very literally, I guess you could think, okay, fire, that means bad, evil spirits. But I don't think that's always the case. I think it's just more of an energy thing. That's my guess.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean Satan is there because someone has started a fire, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and based on, you know, stories and such. You know, but could it have been, you know... The energies have been using some of that. Could that have put some of that fire out? I think that certainly could play into it, mm-hmm. and certainly would probably be affected by it when we're talking about energy on energy. Where did they come from? Did it necessarily come from the fire? I would guess probably not. You know, could it then have used the fire, though, as a conduit of some sort because it was there? Sure.
And could it have been easier because this was Halloween time,
mm-hmm.
with the veil being thinned between our world and the next?
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
So that's part of the reason it's so hard to know what was going on, because so many things were present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's a very difficult one to say, here's exactly what was going on and why, you know, X event happened. But a very compelling story.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be one hell of a bonfire. Did you get to, so I hope you got your marshmallows in before.
Be some wicked s'mores.
Very wicked s'mores.
Wicked s'mores.
That could be something you could market. These s'mores were burned over a campfire that was infested with evil spirits.
Mm-hmm.
That would be that'd be a fun one for Halloween. All the kids would love it. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your stories and experiences with us. Let's go to Claire in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Claire, currently from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I move around a lot, but I wanted to call today to tell you about a truly weird sleep paralysis episode that happened to me. I should say that I've called it before about a sleep paralysis that happened to me when I was a teenager. It was this whole thing, I don't know if you remember, about like this little girl looking at me from a bedside, and this, what I have since become aware, is a shadow person in the corner, shadow person that killed my fish. But anyway, I said in that episode that this has never happened to me since then. And that is true until about 2 months ago. I am 29 now. I'm about to turn 30. And it hasn't happened to me again since I was a teenager living in the basement bedroom of my parents' house to now. And for some strange reason, it just suddenly started happening again. There's no reason for it. My husband and I have lived in the house that we're in for over 2 years now, and I never experienced anything, but it's just upticked with a vengeance. And now I'm having this sleep paralysis more than I did when I was a teenager. It's happening like probably four nights a week, if not more sometimes. It's almost every single time I go to sleep, I have these horrifying sleep paralysis episodes. And usually, they're pretty terrifying. They're pretty intimidating. I can always see somebody in my bedroom, usually standing over me in the bed. Sometimes they just look at me, but the way they're looking at me freaks me out. And sometimes they're saying things to me while they're standing over me in my bed. Telling me that they're going to kill me, and they're going to kill all the people that I love, and they're going to kill my dog, you know. But recently, in the last month or so, it's escalated to the point where there's violence. The first time this happened, it was I had my back turned to the end of the bed, or to the side of the bed. And I couldn't see the person, but I knew somebody was there, and he was talking to me, and he was saying, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you, I have a knife, I'm going to stab you in the back. And then he stabbed me in the back, and I felt this sensation that's not actually pain. It was a tingling in my back. And it just like radiated from this point in my back throughout my entire body. And it's gotten to the point where it's so frequent and kind of, you know, blasé that I know how to deal with it. I try to wake myself up. If I can't, I try to, say my husband's name, because while you're in it, like, you feel yourself in bed. You can feel the covers over you. You can hear, you know, the person sleeping beside you. And possibly one of the most terrifying things is just the sounds that you make when you are trying to call for help and get somebody to wake you up in these situations, because it's just inhuman. Like, I don't think that I can replicate it. I'm not going to try to replicate it because I can't, because it's just these noises of distress that you make when you are slightly unconscious, just very animal noises. And you're trying to scream, but nothing is coming out, or a little bit is coming out, but not very much. But anyway, the reason I'm calling is that all my sleep paralysis dreams are like that. They're very frightening, very intimidating. And then I had one 2 nights ago that was not like those. I was woken up in the middle of the night by my dog, who sleeps in bed with us, and she was moving around. So I woke up, and then when I was trying to go back to sleep, I got into that where you're in between sleep and consciousness, and I heard this disembodied whispering voice saying, "Sarah, Sarah, Sarah." And I should say that my best friend in the world is named Sarah. And the best friend moniker seems very, like, high school, but she is truly my best friend. We've for the majority of our friendship, lived hundreds of miles apart, but our friendship has grown even stronger during that time. We talk to each other on the phone about 5 days a week. But I just heard this voice whispering urgently, "Sarah." And it wasn't scary. It was almost like, it sounded like somebody trying to wake up somebody named Sarah. And so that happened, and I knew what was happening, because at this point, I can tell when the sleep paralysis is happening, and I try to wake myself up. And sometimes I can achieve that. And so in this instance, I woke myself up, and everything was fine. There were no voices in the room. Proceeded to try to go back to sleep. It happened again. "Sarah, Sarah, Sarah." I woke myself up. I was like, seriously? I do go to sleep. I'm very tired. Trying to go back to sleep. It happened again. "Sarah, Sarah, Sarah." At this point, I'm like pretty much convinced that something horrible has happened to my friend. But it's like 3:30 in the morning, so I'm not going to call her in that moment. And I try to go back to sleep again. And I managed to that time completely after 3 episodes of this. But when I woke up in the morning, I texted her immediately and asked her if she was okay. And she texted back and said, "Not really." "Why do you ask?" And I told her about the dream that I had. And it turns out that she had that night before I had this dream. So around 8:30 at night, she had gone to a doc in the box, a 24-hour clinic, because she was throwing up profusely. She was having diarrhea. She was afraid that she maybe had food poisoning, but her husband made her go to an actual doctor, and it turns out that she has gastritis, which is not anything lethal. But she had it so bad that she had to have like an IV. She's on medication for it. She has to adhere to an alkaline diet, a no acid diet. So it's correctable. And I don't know what this is. It certainly wasn't a prophetic dream, because, this had happened to her before I had the dream. But I don't know, kind of weird, because I've never had a sleep paralysis episode like that before. It's never ever been like that. So I don't know, was I picking up on something from one of the people that I'm closest to in the world? I have no idea. So I would like to hear your thoughts on this, on that, and then also on why suddenly in the last 2 months, for no apparent reason, I would start being afflicted with sleep paralysis again. I became a EPP about 2 weeks ago, and I'm loving it. It's great. I guess that's it. Thanks so much, guys. Okay, bye.
It's hard to know why there's an increase in the sleep paralysis, but I think something was trying to get her attention about her friend, and part of that, I think, has to do with being so close to that friend that she could just tell something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of empathic that way.
Well, like a warning of some sort, or at least be there.
She just knew something was off. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do think that, I don't know, it could either be a spirit trying to get her attention or just not being able to get that out of her head.
Sure.
Something was trying to get her attention, definitely.
It's very odd how the sleep paralysis is coming and going. I mean, she'd be a great person to study on sleep paralysis just because she has it so frequently.
Yes.
So your odds of getting some information there would be interesting. I mean, the messages that are coming to her, the things that she's seeing, the things she's experiencing, seem to go beyond like your average sleep paralysis, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times a sleep paralysis, spooky, scary, not all that wonderful, but with the audible things that are being said and just that just to me, it's like, it's hard to say if that is sleep paralysis alone, if there's something else going on there.
Sure.
Because it's teetering on the area of this is beyond sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
I wonder, what would a psychologist say if you go in, you know, and you're saying, I'm having sleep paralysis all the time, and this is what's happening. I mean, is that something that's in that world that they discuss that's, something that people suffer from? I mean, on that regular of a basis, that there'd be much knowledge on how to handle those sort of things? From a scientific standpoint and a medical standpoint.
I don't know. I think you would probably find them trying to get to the root of why your sleep is being disturbed and then treat that instead of approaching it from
a paranormal
or sleep paralysis even type standpoint. They're just going to approach it and probably treat it, I'm guessing, from just a disturbed sleep standpoint.
Sure. Yeah, you have to wonder. I wonder how often that does come up where, you know, it really does appear to be something paranormal, especially when you can link something in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how that conversation goes.
Sure.
You know, that I feel bad for that she's having that frequently. I don't know, that's very odd.
It is odd.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Please keep us updated on how things are going. Let's go to Beth in Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Beth from East Tennessee. I just got my EPP membership, and I'm enjoying listening to all the old episodes. So I want to call in and tell you my story. My parents moved us to Tennessee in the middle of my senior year in high school. And the house that we first moved into was just temporary. It was just so that I could get in and graduate. So the summer after my senior year of high school, my parents rented this other house from my mom's boss. They had just bought the house. The couple who had lived there had lived there apparently for a very long time, grown old and passed away, and their son sold the house to my mom's boss. And in lieu of security deposit, my mom and dad offered to refurnish the hardwood floors that were in the house instead. So they did that, and then we moved in. Well, I worked at a grocery store. My dad drives an 18-wheeler, so he wasn't home. My younger sister was staying the night at a friend's house. So I come home from work. I had closed that night, so it was probably 11 o'clock when I get home. My mom was asleep on the couch when I came in. She woke up when I came in. I go in my bedroom to change in my pajamas and get settled in and go to bed. Well, we hadn't been in the house for very long, so as I'm in my room, I hear furniture being moved. Sounded like a big piece of furniture, like a chest or a dresser being pushed across the floor. then I thought, what the world is that in? I thought, well, Mom, I must have woke her up, and she's probably thought, well, I'm awake, I'm going to do some unpacking and rearranging. Well, my mom was in the living room on the couch hearing that same sound, saying to herself, she's in there dragging that furniture across that hardwood floor that we just refinished. I'm going to go kick her butt for it. So we met in the hallway, and we were both at the same time. We said, what are you doing? I'm not doing anything. What's that noise? And so we kind of got freaked out, and I said, okay, I'm going to bed. I consider myself somewhat sensitive. I think probably we all are if we, you know, sort of let it happen, but that we just sort of are trained to tune it out. But I felt like there was something in that house, but it didn't feel threatening to me, so I didn't really think too much about it. Well, later that winter of the same year, we had a little foyer, and if you're standing in the center of it, to the left was my bedroom door, in the center was the bathroom door, and on the right was my sister's bedroom door. And right outside my sister's bedroom door was a big heater that had an oil tank outside the house that fed the oil in that ran the heater. Well, I slept with my bedroom door open in the winter, otherwise it was really cold in my bedroom. And my sister slept with hers closed, otherwise it got really hot in her bedroom. So I'm laying in my bed, sound asleep. It's the wee hours of the morning, and I hear this sound. It sounds like tennis shoes in a washing machine. This ka-thunk, 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 ka-thunk. And I remember thinking to myself, who put shoes in the washer at, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning? And I opened my eyes. There was no sound being made at all in the house. The heater was on fire, and there were flames shooting out the back of it. So I got up. I couldn't reach the fuel source to turn it off, but I flipped the blower off, and then the flames went out, and then it went whoosh, and this big fireball came out of it. And then it started smoking, and so the smoke detectors off, my parents came barreling out of their room. Dad grabbed the fire extinguisher, and, you know, nobody was harmed. The house was filled with smoke, and I had to wash all my clothes and all that, but nobody was seriously harmed. And I really, really think that whatever ghost was in that house woke me up so that nobody would be harmed. So those are my stories, and I thank you for your time, and I really enjoy the show, and I will continue to be an EVP. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for becoming an EPP and helping to support our show. Act there of a ghost trying to help someone out.
That's a good one. And, you know, it's funny because at first you think it's kind of maybe a not so good ghost because mm-hmm. it's making noises like it's dragging furniture and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it does something like that. So maybe it's just an average ghost, you know, that given the chance, it would do the right thing.
It's there. It's just going to do its thing, and it may, you know, kind of be normally ready to freak you out if it wants to. It's just kind of in that mood, and then, but hey, it wants to do the right thing when called upon.
Exactly.
Yeah, I could see that. I really could see that in that situation. Thank you for sharing your story with us. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, we're writing on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you're wondering what EPP is, if you're a new listener and you've been hearing people talk about it, that's our extra podcast person, EPP. Programs. We release those every week, brand new one filled with some of our best stories that we get in exclusively for EPPs. There's exclusive video content as well, including our video series Seeing Ghosts every month, where we showcase some of the best ghost photos that have been submitted to us. So lots of benefits of being an EPP. It's only $5, and that is what financially keeps this show on the air. So if you like this thing, you want to keep it going, consider becoming an EPP. Get all those extras. It's only $5, and this thing stays on the air because of it. Let's go to Claire in Alabama. Hi.
Hi, Brewskies. This is Claire from Alabama, and I'm calling to tell you a story from my childhood. I've called in... Sorry, I have hiccups. I've called them several times before, but this one is one that carries particular weight for me. I grew up across the street from a girl named Dottie. Her given name was Dorothy, but she went by Dottie. My parents were always suspicious of her mom. her dad wasn't in the picture, and her mom seemed to be a big drug user, which was vindicated after they left the house and the new owners redid the kitchen. There had been a crack in the grout between the sink and the wall, and when they pulled it out, they found hundreds of needles cascading towards them. But my friend Dottie was just wonderful, optimistic, and just a shining light in my life. And this is, I should say, before this was before first grade. This was very young. I can't even, like, understand how I can remember all of this. But, so, my best friend, Dottie, she would come and stay at my house all the time. My parents would never let me go stay at her house, for good reasons, it turns out. But she moved away and this summer between my kindergarten and first grade year. She went to Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And I thought at the time that, oh, well, like Muscle Shoals, that sounds like it's near the coast. That sounds great. Like she's at the beach. No, it's in northwest Alabama. It is about as far as you can get from the coast within the state of Alabama. So, no. But I don't remember this next thing or why I knew this. But a couple months after she left, my mom came and sat down next to me at the dining room table, and she said, I was doing my homework, you know, just doing my thing. And my mom said, Dottie's been in a horrible car accident. And I said, I know. I remember this. I remember saying, I know, but I don't remember why I said, I know. So my mom was like, you know, she kept trying to like tell me about this and try to make me understand. And I was like, no, I know, but she's been in a horrible car accident. So what happened was, her mom was driving their car. She didn't have her seatbelt on. Dottie was in the front seat. She didn't have her seatbelt on. Her younger brother, Austin, was in the back seat, and he did have his seatbelt on. And they ended up having a front-on collision with an 18-wheeler. And Dottie's mom died instantly upon collision. Dottie flew through the windshield and ended up on the pavement. And her brother was still strapped in the back seat with a broken leg. But they, you know, emergency professionals came to the scene and whatever, blah, 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 blah. What happened was that Dottie became a ward of the state because her mother was dead. Her father was not in the picture. Her mother's current boyfriend did not want to have anything to do with it. There were no grandparents to speak of. So both she and her younger brother became wards of the state. So her younger brother went to the foster system while she was in the hospital because she was brain dead because of the accident. And so this happened in Muscle Shoals, and they flew her by medevac helicopter to Birmingham, which is where I lived, because that's where the best hospitals in the state are. So they flew her down there,
and my mom was aware of it, and my mom went, not every day, but many days of the week to check on her. And my mom would go in there and read books to her. And Dottie had brain swelling, which is, this is not anything I knew at the time. These are only things I've learned since then. But Dottie had brain swelling, and so they had to shape her head and open her skull and, you know, do surgery or whatever. And they had shaved 3/4 of her skull, but she had this one quarter of hair that was still there. And my mom would braid it every time she went there. She would braid the hair and tie it with a bow, and she would read books to Dottie. And I asked to go see her. My mom would never let me, which I understand, because it's a really hard thing for a very, very young child. But later, after over a year, I was lying in my parents' bed watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids on their little black and white, like, really old school television. It had the bunny ears and only got like 5 channels. It had the dials that you had to turn, and there was no remote. It was a black and white little tiny television. I was lying in my parents' bed watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids on it, and I felt somebody curling up in bed behind me. And then I realized it was Dottie. And she crawled up behind me and spooned me, like we used to do when we were spending the night together. And, you know, I think I said something like, Dottie, what are you doing here? How are you here? Because I'm really young. I don't understand everything that's going on. And she said, I just wanted to come say hi to you. And I said, oh, well, that's great. How long are you staying? And she said, well, not very long. I'm going somewhere else. And she spooned me for a little while. And then she was just gone. And then I just kept watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids on my parents' black and white TV. And my mom came in eventually to tell me that Dottie was dead, because she had cultivated such a relationship with the nurses, since she was the only person that came to see her, that one of the nurses had called her and told her about it. But when she came in and told me, I said, I know. I know that she's dead. So, God, this has been much more emotional than I expected it to be. And this is a story that's like 20 plus years old. But, yeah, so that's what happened. And, I don't know. I'd like to hear your perspectives on it. I love the show. I'm an EPP, and okay, bye.
Thank you for sharing your experience with us, and I think really the perspective on this is it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, your friend came to say goodbye, and that's really all there is to it.
Sure, and I'm sure it was probably, you know, she knew that you weren't able to come see her in the hospital.
I mean, and nor would she have been able to interact.
Sure.
In the way that she did in her the state that she was in her living state,
right,
at the end. So
right.
There, you know, and I think that she wanted to go and interact with you the way that she had in the past,
mm-hmm.
in a, you know, a familiar, comforting way that she, if she had been able to, you know, be in at the end, that's how she would have wanted it. And she was able to do that in her passing. She was given that little window, it seems, there to go and say goodbye. So. So that you're pretty lucky that you were able to have that moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's really awesome. That's great that you were able to have that. Thank you for sharing that with us. Obviously, that did not sound easy to do to share that experience, but we get those, you know.
We do.
They happen, and that's I think the question is always, well, what was it? It's exactly what you just thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all there is to it. It wasn't something else or somebody else. It was your friend. They were coming, and they were able to say goodbye before they moved on further. So thank you for sharing that with us. And thanks for being an APP and helping to support our show. What's another caller? Hi.
Hey there, Tony and Jenny. This is Richard from Baltimore. Last May 19th, I received an email from my sister telling me that she got a notification on Facebook that it was the birthday of a mutual friend of ours. Well, I had just gotten up that morning, and my head wasn't totally clear yet, and I realized, oh my God, this is also the birthday of my late wife. So I was in my den on my laptop computer when I saw this. I went to leave the room, and I noticed that a photo that I had in a cardboard frame on the wall was gone. Now, this photo was of myself and a female friend in my paranormal group. It was gone. I looked around for it. I finally found it later that day, stuffed in the back of one of my dresser drawers. Okay, I put it back up. Later that night, a friend of mine was over, who is a sensitive, I guess you would say. We were standing in my den, had our backs to this photo. We turned around, the photo was gone. It was off the wall again. I looked behind the bookcase, and it was down there on the floor. I picked it up, hung it back up on the wall. We walked out into the dining room of my house, and he chuckles and he says, Carol, my wife, just said, good luck finding it this time. So we went back into the den. The photo was gone again. It was not on the wall. Later that night, we were downstairs. And my friend, as I said, is somewhat of a sensitive, and we were asking certain questions of wondering if my wife ever visited me. And we were actually getting answers in a very strange manner. It was coming over my printer from my computer. We're asking questions. We were getting answers over the printer. We asked the question, where is the photo? And we got the answer, it is under the rug. We went back up into the den, and there's a throw rug that I have there. I picked it up. The photo was right there. I said, you know what? It's still Carol's birthday. I'm not going to hang this up until tomorrow. So that was three times in a day that photo disappeared off the wall. So I thought that was kind of strange. Wanted to share it with you guys. Thank you so much. Love the show. Bye.
Thanks for listening, and thank you for sharing that story with us. Someone was trying to get a message across there.
Yeah, she doesn't want you have for you to have a picture with another woman anywhere hanging on her birthday.
And that's exactly what that message was. Very clear. Very, very clear.
She's still the woman of the house, obviously.
Thank you for sharing that experience with us. We do greatly appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the show, everybody. If you like it, please help us to stay on the air, become an EPP. Sign up on the website, Real Ghost Stories Online. Click Become an EPP. We greatly appreciate that. Get all those bonus episodes and more. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.